facetious that Justice Ginsburg is tougher than the young soldiers that he works out, because she never gives him any lip. He tells her to do something, and she just wants to get it right. Between the rib fracture and this recent cancer surgery, she was back in the gym, you know, trying to keep herself fit.
And you two are paving the way with being a women-led team who did this documentary. It's what the most, the what, 22nd most successful documentary of all time. Congratulations. You just won the DuPont Columbia Award. And are shortlisted for an Oscar. So congratulations to both of you. Very significant film. It's streaming also on Hulu now.
Yes. Right. Yes. Thank you.
Betsy West and Julie Cohen, directors and producers of the documentary RBG. To see our hour with them at Sundance, you can go to democracynow.org. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is a media job opening for a full-time social media manager here in New York. Resumes go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Tamari Astudio, and Libby Rainey. I'm Amy Goodman with Ermin Shaikh.
Today is the last big Give Day with Willamette Week's Give Guide. Anyone who donates $10 or more to KBOO today will be entered to win the Exploregon Vacation Package. This includes a pair of premium-level seats to literary arts presentation of author Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie and a two-night stay at the Portland Marriott waterfront. It also includes a trip to Astoria with tickets to Liberty Theater, an overnight adventure at Crater Lake with two passes to the Crater Lake Zipline, and more. Anyone who gives $10 today or more will be entered to win. Go to kboo.fm/give or call at 503-231-8032. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. Your dollars have the power to communicate your values. So again, give now at kboo.fm/give or call 503-231-8032. 8032.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a screening of the film From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at Regal Cinemas, Pioneer Place in Portland. The film hosts the path of two combat veterans from the Iraq War as they live with post-traumatic stress, the lack of effective treatment, and their search for healing. This is a crowdsourced event and tickets are currently available for purchase. There will be a brief Q&A following the film. Again, that's a screening of the film From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at Regal Cinemas, Pioneer Place, 340 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 5:02 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up for the KBOO Evening News, a fight to stop teen vaping in our community as it skyrockets across the country.
The Oregon Humane Society is helping to save people and their pets from natural disasters.
And the market starts to make a recovery after a rocky ride.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, December 27, 2018. I'm Annette Newell.
And I'm Rachel Hartley. We have to warn you, the next story has information about a sex crime that some people could find triggering. The Washington County District Attorney says Robert Allen Stewart was pledged guilty to rape and sentenced to 75 months in prison. The case started in 2013 when Stewart, who was 27 years old at the time, met his 13-year-old victim online. He gave her alcohol and marijuana and had sex with her several times. The crimes didn't come to light until 2018 when a school resource officer with the Tigard Police learned of abuse involving the victim. Detective John Shipley of the Washington County Sheriff's Office took over the investigation and arrested Stewart a short time later. Stewart was also convicted of sexual abuse in 2014 in an unrelated case also involving a juvenile victim. Based on this pattern, investigators fear there could be more victims. Anyone with more information on possible crimes involving Stewart should call the sheriff's office right away. You can also report these types of crimes anonymously by calling the Child Abuse Reporting Hotline. That number is 503-731-3100.
Oregon's Department of Consumer and Business Services has issued a cease and desist order against Woodbridge Mortgage Investment, which it says is running an all-too-common real estate investment scam. The state says Woodbridge raised money from about 70 Oregonians for an investment that was not registered. Woodbridge salespersons, most of whom were not licensed to sell investments, promised investors that their money would be secured by a mortgage in real estate. The investigation showed Woodbridge did not record any mortgages. In December of 2017, Woodbridge stopped making interest payments and filed for bankruptcy. Because Woodbridge failed to record mortgages on the real estate, investors were treated as general unsecured creditors in the bankruptcy case. Also in 2017, the SEC filed a lawsuit against Woodbridge, accusing it of a $1.2 billion Ponzi scheme. Several other states have taken similar actions against Woodbridge. Promissory notes, a leading source of complaints, are a promise to pay a sum of money at a stated time. They're similar to a loan, and they usually pay interest. Last year, state regulators did 210 note investigations, and they took 149 enforcement actions. In Oregon, 5 investigations resulted in enforcement actions. You can learn more about this at dfr.oregon.gov.
Portland police arrested 2 suspects and seized 2 firearms during what they call a, and quote, menacing investigation. It all started when an officer saw a car go into a parking lot with a posted, and quote, no trespassing sign. The officer contacted the people in the car and learned they were trying to find a person in another car. During a search, officers found and seized 2 handguns. They arrested 21-year-old Gerard Hicks and 19-year-old Conti Motley, Jr. Hicks, on charges of possession of a loaded firearm and unlawful possession of a firearm.
In a robbery in Marysville, Washington, it was nail guns versus bullet guns. 2 young men stole 4 nail guns from a farm supply store north of Seattle. When they got in their Honda to make their getaway, they were surrounded by 6 men with pistols and rifles. The men shot 2 of the Honda's tires, which was found unoccupied 3 blocks away with 2 flats and the nail guns inside. Both robbers were apprehended after a brief search.
Groups that support public lands expect that Oregon will get more protections in 2019. Eric Tegedoff with the Public News Service explains.
People who rely on public lands are urging members of Congress to protect iconic Oregon landscapes at the start of their session in 2019. With the 115th Congress occupied by a spending bill, time ran out for the Oregon Wildlands Act and the Frank and Jeannie Moore Wild Steelhead Special Management Area Designation Act. But congressional members have promised to vote in January on a lands package that would protect more than 1.8 million acres in 4 states. Zach Collier, owner of the Northwest Rafting Company, says even though he's disappointed the Oregon bills didn't pass this year, he believes their approval is inevitable.
We want these bills to pass, but these are no-brainers. I mean, these are all slam dunks. They're going to happen, hopefully in January, but they'll happen eventually.
Collier says he's appreciative of Oregon Senator Ron Wyden's work on this. The Oregon Wildlands Act would provide wilderness protections to roughly 36,000 acres of the Devil's Staircase area and designate more than 250 miles of wild and scenic rivers. The other bill, named for local outdoor enthusiast Frank and Jeannie Moore, would protect nearly 100,000 acres in Douglas County. Liz Hamilton, head of the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association, says these protections would have a profound effect on the health of river systems that are key to Oregon's salmon and steelhead populations. She says there's been a grassroots movement from locals to get these areas protected. She also praises Wyden's steadfast work supporting these bills.
He is committed, and those of us who care about these iconic rivers that he's been working to protect, the Molalla, the Rogue, the Elk, the Checko, Umpqua, these projects have been in process for decades, and we're thrilled to have a champion work on it, and we're thrilled to continue the work.
The Oregon bills are included in a lands package that also would protect areas in California, New Mexico, and Utah. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trust. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Portland's water is getting better results according to the latest test from the Bull Run Watershed for Cryptosporidium, a disease-causing microorganism. Samples collected on December 23rd and 24th only had one detection each, and the organism was not detected at all in samples from the 25th and 26th. Before this, it was last found on December 19th. The city is still using Bull Run as its primary source of drinking water. The Portland Water Bureau does not currently treat for Cryptosporidium, but is required to do so under drinking water regulations. Portland's working to install filters by September of 2027. Exposure to the bug can cause serious illness. Symptoms include vomiting, fever, and stomach pain. People with healthy immune systems can recover without medical treatment. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, people with severely weakened immune systems are at risk for more serious disease, though. Their symptoms may be more severe and could even lead to life-threatening illnesses. Examples of people with weakened immune systems include those with AIDS, inherited diseases that affect the immune system, and cancer and transplant patients who are taking certain drugs. People who have questions about water quality can call the water line at 503-823-7525.
Clark County has a new effort in the works to fight the dangers of young people vaping. Prevent Coalition is hosting a public forum for community members with a panel of youth, prevention experts, and school-based police officers. According to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, 1.5 million more students used e-cigarettes in 2018 compared to 2017. That's a 78% increase among high school students and a 48% increase among middle school students. At the forum titled, and quote, "It's Not Just Vaping, Trends Gaining Steam Among Youth in Clark County," they'll feature personal testimony from local young people. They will include a former user of vapor products who's turned into tobacco prevention ambassadors. Also speaking will be young people who've witnessed a surge in vapor and e-cigarette use among teens in Clark County. This event is free and open to the public. You can join the conversation on Wednesday, January 30th from 3:30 to 5 p.m. at the ESD 112 Conference Center at 2500 Northeast 65th Avenue in Vancouver.
Today, the Oregon Humane Society is going for broke in an effort to get to a record-breaking 12,000 adoptions on the books. The goal is to find loving homes for every pet at the shelter by the end of 2018. It's been an historic year already for the Humane Society members who have helped save stranded pets from two hurricanes and the wildfires in California. During a special adoption event that began today, they'll charge $50 for dogs, $15 for cats, and 50% off adoption fees for puppies and kittens younger than 6 months. The lower fees will continue through Monday, December the 31st. The Oregon Humane Society's hours for viewing and meeting those pets are 10 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Thursday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, and 10 a.m. to 4:30 on Monday, New Year's Eve. So you can find the shelter at this address. It's 1067 Northeast Columbia Boulevard in Portland. Stay with KBOO for a little later this hour, and we will have an in-depth interview about the record-breaking and heroic efforts the Oregon Humane Society has made this year.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on a record-breaking year for the Oregon Humane Society, crossing the country, responding to natural disasters. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, stay tuned to KBOO for the Indigenous Power Hour. Tonight's weather, we can expect some showers late with an overnight low down to 39 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, rain, showers in the morning, becoming a steady light rain in the afternoon. The high will reach about 45 degrees. As for the weekend, we're looking at rain for Saturday, showers on Sunday. Today in history, on December 27th, 1956, Tallahassee, Florida, finally outlawed segregation on its buses. The quote of the day is from civil rights icon Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who said, and quote, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that."
The partial government shutdown doesn't have an end in sight. House GOP leaders say they do not expect a vote this week to reopen the government. That means the shutdown is likely to drag into next week and next year. About one quarter of the federal government shut down on Saturday after Congress and the president could not make a deal on funding over his demands for $5 billion for a wall on the Mexican border. Both sides are trying to blame the other.
Stocks surged on Wall Street on reports of strong holiday sales. Also, a West Coast effort to promote a pro-kid agenda for 2019. And find out why exercise could be the key to younger brains. These stories and more in today's report from Mike Clifford with the Public News Service.
It has been a seesaw ride on Wall Street for sure, with the New York Times reporting early reports of strong holiday season sales for retailers, and reassuring news from Washington and Moscow pulled Wall Street from the brink of a bear market. Stocks posted their best day since 2009 as sales data showed spending by U.S. consumers remains vibrant and Russia signaled it was willing to help keep oil prices higher. The Times notes that investors were also reassured by the White House's official statement that Jerome Powell's job as Fed Reserve Chairman was 100% safe. California's kids and young adults could benefit from a pro-kid agenda during the new administration of Governor Gavin Newsom. That's according to a new report just out from the nonprofit group Children Now.
The agenda lays out steps the state could take to improve quality of life for the state's more than 11 million people younger than age 26. Ted Lempert is president of Children Now, the nonprofit that pulled together the ideas from 80 partner coalitions to form the agenda. He says the state could make a huge difference by focusing on the first few years of life.
It's really critical that the state invest in quality early childhood programs. So the agenda highlights both the need for increased access to quality child care, home visiting programs, developmental screenings, and really putting a key emphasis on the earliest years.
The report also says the state needs leadership to push to better integrate data from the various agencies to identify which programs are producing results and expand on them. Another series of proposals looks at ways to improve foster care so that children are placed with permanent families as soon as possible to avoid the disruption of multiple moves. Lempert says he would also like to see the state bring more services for kids directly onto school grounds.
We really need to ensure that health services and screenings are where the kids are at.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
Statistics show California has the worst record in the nation when it comes to making counselors, nurses, special ed, and other support staff available on campus. The report recommends a higher target for local control funding formula, which allows schools to hire more of that staff. A rare tornado touched down in western Washington last week, causing devastation and heartache for Port Orchard residents just before the holidays. Eric Tegenoff has the latest.
Now community members and groups are pulling together to support those affected, including Kitsap County credit unions. About 250 homes were damaged by the most powerful tornado to hit the state since 1986, but no one was injured or killed. Sean Gilfeder, president and CEO of Kitsap Credit Union, says he could see the tornado forming from his office in Bremerton. His credit union has set up a disaster recovery loan program for folks who were in the tornado's path, allowing them to borrow up to $5,000 with no payments for 90 days.
Just trying to do as much as we can to provide relief to those individuals that are applying for, you know, financial aid through FEMA, which can take weeks, if not months.
Kitsap Credit Union has teamed up with other credit unions on the Kitsap Peninsula and raised more than $10,000 for the local United Way, which is helping families recover.
Meantime, South Dakota is one of 14 states that has not expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, a move that would improve health care services for the state's large American Indian population, according to at least one expert. Ross Brown has our report.
Nurse Margaret Moss has spent 30 years researching and educating the public about the health of indigenous people. South Dakota has the fourth largest percentage of Native Americans in the U.S., with rates of death from heart disease, diabetes, pneumonia, and other causes that are significantly higher than non-Hispanic whites. And Moss says the numbers have been static for three decades.
People think American Indians are the past. They're not around anymore. And you don't have a very good understanding or view of the history or politics or culture of American Indians in a state, then you're not going to vote for things.
Governor Dennis Dugard appointed a coalition 4 years ago with the goal of improving health care for American Indians, but opposition from fellow GOP lawmakers led him to decide against applying for Medicaid expansion, and the coalition was disbanded last month.
The Indian Health Service is one of several agencies currently affected by the government shutdown. And finally, Antoinette Kerr reports researchers have found yet another reason, particularly for seniors, to add exercise to their New Year's resolutions.
A report published this year in the journal Neurology examined multiple studies linking regular exercise to better cognitive skills in older adults at risk for dementia. In a 6-month period, participants who did 35 minutes of aerobic exercise daily showed significant improvement in planning, problem solving, and decision making. State Director of AARP Tennessee, Rebecca Kelly, says it should encourage people of all ages to stick to their fitness resolutions.
New Year's resolutions are great. I think the trick is to not set yourself up for failure. I also think the more normal you can make that routine and the simpler, the longer you're going to be able to do it.
Getting healthy is at the top of the New Year's resolution list, according to Google.
By the way, experts do suggest before seniors start on any fitness program, they check with their doctor to make sure they're aware of any limitations. If you want more tips on being active and eating healthier, look online at aarp.org. I'm Mike Clifford, and thanks for Newsin' and Cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. South Dakota is one of more than a dozen states that has not expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. As Roz Brown reports, a health professional says Medicaid could help improve services for the state's Native American population.
Nurse Margaret Moss has spent 30 years researching and educating the public about the health of Indigenous people. South Dakota has the fourth largest percentage of Native Americans in the U.S., with rates of death from heart disease, diabetes, pneumonia, and other causes that are significantly higher than non-Hispanic whites. And Moss says the numbers have been static for 3 decades.
People think American Indians are the past. They're not around anymore. And you don't have a very good understanding or view of the history or politics or culture of American Indians in a state, then you're not going to vote for things.
Governor Dennis Dugard appointed a coalition 4 years ago with the goal of improving health care for American Indians, but opposition from fellow GOP lawmakers led him to decide against applying for Medicaid expansion, and the coalition was disbanded last month. 30% of the 50,000 state residents who would qualify for expanded Medicaid are Native Americans. Moss says a huge obstacle for improving health care is patient misidentification, which is higher for American Indians than any other group.
So if the numbers are all wrong, we don't even really know what are the true death rates, what are the true cancer rates or admission rates, access rates. We don't know a whole lot because nobody asks or they guess.
Moss says the Federal Indian Health Service is chronically underfunded. She notes there are now 573 federally recognized U.S. tribes, but when addressing policymakers, she's found few are familiar with their own state's demographics.
Do you know the tribes that are there and what are they and whatever? And no one ever knows. Said, if you don't know that, how can I even get to the intricacies of their specific problem?
The Indian Health Service is one of several agencies affected by the current government shutdown. I'm Roz Brown.
South Dakota Governor-elect Kristi Noem has picked the leader of the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate Nation to be the next Secretary of Tribal Relations, the Rapid City Journal reports. David Flute will reportedly finish out his chairmanship next week. Noem's office is touting his work on tribal economic initiatives, public safety, and health care. The Secretary and Tribal Relations Department works with the 9 tribes in the state on government-to-government relations and policy in a number of areas, including health, education, economic development, and social services. Inaugural ceremonies are scheduled for January 5th. The St. Regis Mohawk Tribe in New York has filed a lawsuit in federal court against opioid makers and distributors, claiming the prescription drug has devastating impacts on the community. The tribe claims an opioid epidemic has led to health effects and greatly impacts families, estimating opioid abuse and addiction has accounted for 85% to 90% of child welfare cases in the last 5 years. The lawsuit filed last week seeks to hold companies responsible for costs incurred in responding to the epidemic. Tribes across the country have filed similar lawsuits. Drug makers and pharmacies in other cases have filed motions to dismiss, claiming the failure to prove alleged harm. Human remains found in Lee County, New Mexico, are expected to be turned over to the Mescalero Apache tribe. The Carlsbad Current Argus reports they were found during construction on federal land, traditional territory of the tribe. In a December announcement by the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM intends to transfer possession of the remains to the tribe. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Those weren't presents that ICE officials were dropping off at El Paso, Texas, Greyhound Station, December 22nd through Christmas Day. They were nearly 700 asylum applicants released from ICE detentions, taken to the bus station without money, food, or a place to stay. Of 180 people dropped off on Christmas, a day the low temperature reached 44 degrees, at least half were children. Unlike prior drop-offs, ICE did not let local agencies and shelters know about the Sunday and Monday releases ahead of time. Downtown El Paso, on the Mexican border, sees around 2,000 migrants a week released by federal agencies.
Iconic retailer Sears may be in its last 24 hours. CNBC reports the company's last shot at survival is a $4.6 billion proposal from Eddie Lampert. That bid faces challenges, though. The 125-year-old company has more than 68,000 employees. It filed for bankruptcy in October. Without a bid, liquidators will break the company up into pieces. The deadline is 4 Eastern time on Friday.
President Trump's order to withdraw all American troops from Syria and half from Afghanistan managed to unite both the left and right. According to the New York Times, Trump's decision-making process was so chaotic that it short-circuited a debate about the future of America's wars. Military analysts say the case for pulling out and stronger in Afghanistan and in Syria is more than Afghanistan than in Syria, where the U.S. is abandoning its Kurdish allies, leaving a chance for the Islamic State to regroup and ceding power to Iran and Russia. During his visit with the troops in Iraq on Wednesday, Trump insisted that people will come around to his way of thinking. He said, "American troops have been in Syria long enough." He told troops at the airbase in Iraq, quote, "We're no longer suckers, folks."
Well, a little late, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael has his wish list.
It's the day after Christmas. All the gifts have been given, but here's what I really want. A new coat to stay warm while protesting, a pay raise or a cost of living increase or a better job, a faster internet connection to text everyone in Congress at once, more ways to save the planet, decreasing prices for food, fuel, and shelter, another year of making new friends and keeping the old ones, a collection of Trump photos and cartoons so whenever he says something that could anger or depress me, I'm reminded of how ridiculous he is. A pocket that magically refills with change after I empty it for someone who asks if I can spare some. An inexplicable inner happiness that gives me a sincere smile to share with everyone I walk past. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
While the gray whales migrate south along the Oregon coast, Japan has announced its plan to return to commercial whale killing. Japan's first move is withdrawing from the International Whaling Commission, which bans such action. For years, Japan has engaged in whaling as part of a scientific research permitted by the IWC and international waters in the Arctic and South Pacific. Critics have questioned the lack of results from this alleged research and the whale meat on sale in Japan. In July, Japan will begin commercial whaling on its own territorial waters, which, like Oregon's, include routes of migrating whales.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, December 28th, 2018. Here are the main points again. A fight to stop teen vaping emerges in Clark County as the problem skyrockets across the country. The Oregon Humane Society is helping to save both people and their pets from natural disasters. And the market starts to make a bit of a recovery after a rocky ride. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, so we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at this number, 503-231-8032. Our producers for tonight's newscast are Annette Newell and Rachel Hartley. Our engineer is Mike Pataklis. The director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell.
And I'm Rachel Hartley, coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, I'm Positively Revolting. Ani takes your calls. At 9, One Land, Many Voices explores the political, social, and cultural issues affecting Israel and Palestine. At 10, Valley Views continues its series on death and end-of-life care. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, Pacific Underground, a show for and by the Asian and Pacific Islander communities in the Northwest. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by your members' support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Today on KBOO News In Depth, we're going to focus on natural disasters, and specifically how they don't just impact people, they affect pets too. Joining us live right now is Laura Klink with the Oregon Humane Society. Thank you so much for being with us today, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
You know, it's been a very big year for the Humane Society, and you've been involved in helping people and pets recover from some major disasters. First, the hurricanes. Tell us about your assistance with Hurricane Florence.
Sure. We partnered with the ASPCA during Hurricane Florence. They were on the ground, I think, right after the storm hit, and they reached out to us. We have about 130 folks, staff and volunteers here at the Oregon Humane Society who are certified in emergency animal sheltering. So the ASPCA reached out to us. We partner with them quite often during natural disasters, and we had a team that was doing daily care of some of the animals in a rural shelter just west of Wilmington. And so we were on the ground there for about a week. And then following that, obviously, it was a very busy hurricane season when Hurricane Michael hit the panhandle of Florida. We were, again, in touch with the ASPCA. We responded a little differently in that particular instance. We worked with the Humane Society of the United States, who was in Pensacola. What happens a lot of times during natural disasters, how we can best help here in Oregon, is to help clear animals that were already in the shelters before the natural disaster started. So that helps clear up space so they can help some of those pets that are directly affected by the disaster. So in the case of Pensacola, Florida, we worked with HSUS to have a chartered flight with about 100 cats come up here, and so then they were, again, better able to help their neighboring communities with displaced pets.
Awesome.
And then most recently, of course, the Camp Fire and the Woolsey Fire, the Camp Fire especially, we've been on the ground. We had two different teams that deployed, one with the ASPCA and then one with the Department of Agriculture. And, you know, I was part of the team that went down with the ASPCA in late November. And, you know, that was really... you know, very gratifying work, but very difficult work. The folks down there have just lost so much. And to have someone come in and tell you about, you know, their house burned down, they lost everything, and they just want to find their pet. Because one thing that about the campfire, especially that maybe a lot of people aren't mm-hmm. Aware of, is that a lot of people were at work mm-hmm. when that fire broke out.
Oh, so nice. And you yourself were on the ground there. What was that experience like?
You know, it was very emotional. It was very difficult. You know, the folks, again, one of my roles down there was doing some daily care, you know, of the animals, many that had been, you know, displaced by the fire, and then working with people that were coming in and looking for their pets. So again, we'd hear these stories of folks that just wanted to be reunited with their pets. And there were so many amazing organizations from all over the country, certainly the local groups there. North Valley Animal Disaster Group, which is in Butte County, they just had been, you know, working night and day to try to take in these pets, take care of them, and then make sure that they are reunited with their owners.
Now, based on what you yourself have seen and experienced in all of these natural disasters, what advice would you give to all the pet owners out there?
You know, a couple things are really important. Certainly microchipping your pet is, you know, probably one of the best ways to make sure that they are, you know, that you are reunited with them. You know, every pet that came into the emergency animal shelters that I've been involved in, you know, are always scanned to see if they have a microchip. Also, as a pet owner, make sure that microchip information is up to date. So depending on what chip company that, you know, your pet is microchipped through, just making sure that information is up to date, especially if you move, certainly a collar and ID tag. And then one thing I think that all these natural disasters really teach us is to have a plan in place. You know, if we are affected here in Oregon by a big disaster, we hear a lot about the threat of a possible earthquake. You know, it could be a fire on your block, the gas explosion. I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios that you would need to really kind of snap into action and get your pets out of harm's way. So, you know, having a plan, make sure you have a carrier in your home for each of your pets, you know, extra leashes, maybe a little emergency stash of food and water, just like you'd have for people in your home if we do encounter a disaster.
What should people do if they see an animal in distress or that seems lost?
You know, one of the best, you know, if you're able to, you know, safely get that animal and, you know, bring it to either a county shelter, an emergency vet. It just really depends. When I was down in California, you know, there were a lot of folks that were, you know, on the ground, really, you know, that were familiar with the areas that were burned and helping to, you know, especially cats. Cats can be, you know, if they're during a chaotic moment, they might be hard to get into a carrier and get out of harm's way. And so, you know, the response afterwards of people really, you know, looking through those areas, looking, you know, for lost pets, lost cats in particular. But, you know, step in to help when you can. You know, certainly keep your own personal safety in mind in any type of situation where you're dealing with a lost pet. That animal might be scared. You know, you don't know if they're going to bite. But, you know, again, just, you know, use your good judgment and help when you can, and have some of those tools at home. So if you are in a position where you can help, that you're able to.
Now, the Oregon Humane Society is on track to set an adoption record this year. How exciting. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a really exciting year for us. We celebrated 150th anniversary. We were founded in 1868, which a lot of people don't know. We're one of the oldest animal shelters, animal welfare organizations in the country. And so for the past 8 years, we've hit about 11,000 adoptions. And this year, it's really exciting. We're on track to hit about 12,000 adoptions. And it's really, you know, to be honest, a wonderful testament to how adoption is such an automatic for people when they are looking to to add a pet to their family, that a lot of people consider adoption first. One of the amazing things in our community too is how much people have adopted spay-neuter as a way to prevent unwanted puppies and kittens, and that's really kind of turned the tide for us and enabled us to reach out to other shelters around the state and around the region to help with overpopulation in those areas. But, you know, again, 12,000 adoptions is just, you know, we're super proud of it. I mean, this community should be really proud of it. We've got a lot of, you know, great shelters and rescue groups in our area. It's just a really great testament to how people in this area really turn to adoption first when they want to have a pet.
And you are offering an adoption special starting today through Monday.
Tell us what folks can expect during this time.
Sure. So, you know, our goal is to save as many lives by the end of the year and get as many pets in homes to start 2019 as possible. So through Monday, we've reduced our adoption fees. It's $50 for dogs and $15 for adult cats, and then 50% off the adoption fees for puppies and kittens. So what people can expect, one thing I encourage folks to do is to check our website, OregonHumane.org. We update it every evening. At about between 8 and 9 o'clock with all the pets that will be available for adoption the next day. So if you, say, come into the shelter tomorrow and you don't see a pet that maybe is a good fit for your family, keep checking, because every day we're bringing in animals, either people who've had to relinquish their pets or working with shelters from, like I said, around the region and all around the state to save lives and help these pets find homes.
You know, between the 12,000 goal of adoption locally plus the hundreds that you've helped across the country in the wildfires and after the terrible hurricanes, how many animals do you think you've been able to save this year alone?
Oh, you know, I would probably, you know, it's interesting, the disaster work. I mean, we were caring for basically other people's pets, so interacting with and caring for, you know, upwards of probably 400 to 500 animals, and I would say that's probably in addition to, I mean, that 12,000 number is probably, you know, pretty spot on as far as, you know, how many animals we've been able to bring in and find homes for. You know, additionally, we are part of a coalition throughout Portland called Spay and Save, and that provides free and low-cost spay-neuter services for cats in our community. And so this is for people who own a cat and maybe don't have the resources to pay for a spay-neuter surgery. And so we are, you know, like I said, part of a coalition, and I would say every year we do about 3,000 or 4,000 of those surgeries here also. So, you know, I would say, you know, 14,000 to 15,000 animals have, you know, been touched in some way by our services.
This is also a very special anniversary year, 150 years for the Humane Society. Why is this so important to you, and why is this important to the community?
You know, I think Oregonians should be really proud of the legacy that we have of just compassion and kindness in our community. The Oregon Humane Society was founded just 9 years after Oregon became a state. And, you know, it's a great testament to the drive and the innovation of our founder, Dr. Thomas Lamb Elliott. He saw a horse being abused in downtown Portland and thought, you know what, we could do better. And he brought together a group of like-minded Portlanders, and they, you know, created the Oregon Humane Society. And in very early days, the Oregon Humane Society also ran an orphanage and took care of children. So, you know, really just weaving compassion and kindness into the fabric of our community has been, you know, part of our mission from the very beginning. And so just to see, especially in Portland, how things have really evolved and changed over the years, like I said, you know, 10, 20 years ago, the problem of pet overpopulation. I've been, you know, a volunteer before I became an employee at the Oregon Humane Society. So, you know, 20 years ago, we'd see litters of, you know, puppies and kittens, especially during the summer, coming in. And, you know, the euthanasia rates were pretty high back in those days because there just were not enough homes for them all. And through, you know, spay-neuter and cooperation amongst the different shelters, you know, we've really been able to turn that ship. And now we're, you know, again, able to reach out throughout Oregon and beyond to help save even more lives. And you know, that again is just, you know, that's been just built over the last 150 years, and it's a part of our heritage as a state that everyone should be really proud of.
You mentioned the work of volunteers being very important. If people want to learn more about that or help out, what can they do? What should they do?
Sure. We have so many volunteer opportunities here at the Oregon Humane Society, whether you like to take photographs or you want to walk dogs or help with our special events or, you know, deploy to disasters. First step really is just going to our website, OregonHumane.org, and there's information about how to volunteer here. There's an orientation that folks go through, and then they learn kind of, you know, about all the the wide array of opportunities here. So we have an amazing group of foster parents that help, you know, when pets come to us and aren't quite ready for adoption. Our foster parents are such an important part of making sure, like, say an animal's come to us with a broken leg and has surgery. Well, that animal's not ready to be placed up for adoption yet, and so that animal might recoup in a foster home for 6 to 8 weeks and get some physical therapy, you know, while they're recovering. You know, when we reach out to other shelters who have, you know, are taking in loads and loads of kittens, you know, maybe some come to us a little young and not ready for adoption. Our foster parents will help nurse them back to health. Certainly in the shelter, you know, our dogs get multiple walks a day. We've got, you know, special volunteer opportunities to work with some of the animals that come to us that maybe need a little bit of behavior assistance. Maybe they're really shy. Maybe they've never been on a leash before. There's a huge variety of volunteer opportunities. And, you know, no matter what your passion is, volunteering is always just, you know, you always get so much more than you give when you volunteer. So whether animals are your passion or something else in the community is what you know, pulls at your heart, I'm always a big advocate to get involved and give back.
What else would you like listeners to know about the Humane Society?
You know, I think, again, they're, you know, pets just bring so much to our lives. So whether you adopt from the Oregon Humane Society or another of one of the great shelters or rescue groups in our area, you know, just, you know, give a pet in need a home. You'll always get back so much more than you give. And so, you know, I'm the proud mom to three dogs from local shelters and three cats from some of the volunteer work I did in New Orleans, and they add a lot of fun to my life. So I'm very grateful to them. And you know, the other thing too, just about the Oregon Humane Society, and you know, just our donors really make all this work possible. We don't receive any tax funding or government funding, and so we're totally donor driven. So again, that's the fact that we've been able to do all this work is a direct reflection of the generosity and the compassion of our community. So we're real grateful for that.
You know, we've all heard those like heartbreaking stories about people who try to adopt a pet and then end up taking it back because it didn't work with their family. You know, what advice would you give to people who want to adopt a pet and they want to get a pet that actually works for their family so it's more of a success story?
Sure. I think, you know, the first thing, I know a lot of times people will be focused on a specific breed or they maybe think they want, say, a puppy. But, you know, really think about your lifestyle and what's going to be a good fit with your lifestyle. You know, are you really active? Do you like to go camping? Do you have friends with dogs that you know, want to make sure you have a dog, say, that's dog friendly? You know, do you have other cats at home? So really, you know, take the time to look around. You know, it's, you know, take the time to really think about what's going to be the right fit for your family. We have Oregon Humane Society. We've got a lot of great training classes. We have an online resource library to deal with behaviors because adopting a pet, it's amazing, but it can also be really overwhelming at first. So, you know, we are definitely here to help support folks after they adopt also. You know, be patient. Sometimes it takes a while to find the pet that's the right fit for your home. So, you know, if you come to the shelter once and you don't maybe find an animal that's the right fit for you, you know, certainly come back. And, you know, understandably, sometimes there are those cases where, you know, we do get a lot of animals from other shelters that don't have a long history because maybe they were strays. And so, you know, we have limited information. Folks might connect with that animal, get them home, and decide it's not maybe the right fit for them. So, you know, certainly if, you know, that happens, we will gladly, you know, accept those returns.
How can we keep our neighbors accountable and our friends accountable when it comes to the treatment of our animals?
You know, I think a lot of times it's just a matter of education. So sometimes, you know, people just don't know the right way, you know, the right tools to use to, you know, walk a dog and or keep a dog from pulling. And so that, you know, pet owners can sometimes get sort of frustrated. So I think, you know, being sometimes it's just, again, a matter of education. So pointing folks to the right resources, to the right training resources, you know, if it's a matter of someone not being able to afford vet care, you know, helping that person research some options that are out there in the community. So, you know, again, I think it's just a matter of education, and there's always a way to, I think, approach those things and not put someone on the defensive. You know, just really, most people have really good intentions and want to do the right thing. Sometimes people just don't know what the right thing is to do. So, we've got a lot of information on our websites to support pet owners. You know, certainly if you know, you see something extreme going on, to obviously contact the authorities. But I think in general, it just really comes down to people just not, you know, not knowing. So if you've got some information and some knowledge to pass along to someone that you see is struggling with their pet, you know, there's definitely a way to do that in a compassionate way.
I know you're going for the 12,000 adoptions this year. How many animals do you have that are needing homes right now?
You know, we were just talking about this earlier. I think right now we have about 130 or so animals here. Last night some of our we had a transport of about 38 dogs come up from a couple of shelters in California. Those guys will be ready tomorrow. They believe they were being spayed and neutered today. So I would say at any given time we probably have about between 130 and 150 animals available for adoption.
And what's the breakdown? Are you seeing more dogs, more cats, puppies, kittens?
You know, one really kind of interesting trend, I guess you could say, that we've noticed is dog adoptions seem to be busier in the early part of the day, and the cat folks like to sleep in, I think, a little bit. So, you know, our cat adoptions usually happen more later in the day, which I just think is really interesting.
I tend to be more of a cat person, so
yeah,
I'm not sure what that
people
says,
like to,
huh?
to sleep in.
Yeah. What can folks do at home to make sure that their animals are as comfortable as possible? I know that you were talking about, like, us keeping ourselves accountable because we just don't have the information. So, like, what sort of, like, practices can folks use at home in order to keep their animals comfortable?
Well, you know, one of the with you know, pet, especially with dogs, you know, structure and consistency is really important. One of the things that our trainers here teach in all of the manners classes that we have here is something called learn and earn. So, you know, dogs especially like to, you know, they like to have that structure. So making your dog sit before they get their dinner, making them sit before they go out for a walk, you know, give them a treat when they stop at a corner, you know, things like that, really getting that structure and that consistency and that ability for the dog to sort of have a little bit of a job and earn certain things. One thing that our trainers talk about, which I think really rings true, is, you know, we tend to notice the things that our dogs are doing wrong way more than we notice the things that they're doing right. So if you were to flip that, and when you notice your dog doing something that you want them to do and really praising them and giving them a treat, you know, so really focusing on the positive, not just on, you know, what they're doing wrong, but really focusing on what they're doing right. And again, depending on the pet, you know, figuring out what they need. So, like, for example, you know, you may have a dog that just loves being around people. So, you know, find those opportunities to get together with friends. If you have, like, say, for example, a really active cat, a lot of people don't realize, you know, you can schedule, you can have playtime with your cat. And that can include playing, you know, with one of those little fish lure of toys, and, you know, really getting them, you know, it's kind of a two-way street. You are playing with them, and it's amazing how when a cat has those abilities to really act like a cat and get some exercise and have the opportunity to almost, like, use their prey drive, how much more relaxed that makes them because they've had that opportunity to be a cat. And, you know, one of the a really important thing, too, is as a pet owner is to just understand your pet's body language. I find find it really fascinating, dog body language and cat body language. We have free workshops for folks to help understand that because, you know, a cat really communicates with their tail. So when that tail is, like, whipping around really fast, it's like, okay, I'm going to leave you alone right now. But if that if that tail is, like, relaxed with, like, a little question mark up at the top, that means, okay, good, I'm nice and happy. And so, you know, that, you know, just understanding your pet and what their needs are and you know, creating a plan around it, just like in some structure, just like you would do with anything else, really.
Yeah, totally. And you bring up a great point with treats and understanding your animal's body language. How would you tell listeners that who do own animals how they can improve their animal's diet if they are giving them treats for congratulations to their good work?
Well, you know, we use treats in a lot of our basic manners classes, but then, you know, there's kind of a process of sort of weaning them off that. And so, you know, as soon, you know, you might get your dog to kind of sit and treat them every time they sit, but then, you know, gradually wean them off of that. I mean, I use, like, string cheese sometimes. You know, there's a lot of really great products on the market that have limited ingredients. You know, I have one of my dogs has some food sensitivities, so I have to be pretty careful with what I give him. But, you know, just do your research and find something that's got, you know, you're better off going with quality over quantity. So if it's, you know, one of those, they make these great little treat rolls. They almost look like salamis, and you can cut those into really small little pieces, and you just have to give a tiny, tiny bit as a reward. I mean, dogs don't necessarily have to have a big mouthful every time they've done something right. And same thing with cats. You know, some of those little fish flakes make great little treats for them. You know, you can teach a cat a lot of different tricks. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, I know people who actually make their own dog food from scratch for some very pampered pets.
Wow. Yeah.
And then you see those pupcakes, you know, those bakeries that have those adorable treats. Mm-hmm. You know, is it hard to figure out what a dog or a cat really needs in their diet? And is it advisable to make homemade dog food?
You know, that's a great question. You know, for every animal, I think, is going to be different. So I think that would be something to discuss with your vet. I mean, I know a lot of folks are into raw food diets. I'm not super familiar with them. So, again, I think it's a matter of, you know, talking with your veterinarian, especially if you're thinking about doing anything that maybe is a little different, especially from what you're doing now. You know, there's so many. In our latest issue of our magazine, we had a great recipe from one of our volunteers who makes homemade treats for our dogs here at the shelter, and, you know, very limited ingredients. I think it's got, like, you know, peanut butter, a little bit of molasses, and, like, chicken broth or something really, really simple. So, you know, they're, again, just look at that, you know, just like you would do for, you know, what you eat, you know, just look at the ingredient list of what you're feeding your pet, and, you know, just, yeah, mm-hmm. Just keep an eye on that.
Okay. Let's mention that adoption special that started today one more time. If folks want to get involved with this, it's kind of a sale event, right?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of part of our New Year's celebration. So we're looking to ring in 2019 by making sure every pet that's here has a home to begin 2019. So right now, the adoption fees have been reduced. So the adoption fee for a dog is $50. An adult cat is $15, and then puppies and kittens, it's 50% off of their regular adoption fee. And all the adoption fees, including all our animals, have been spayed and neutered. They've been microchipped. They've had their vaccines. The adoption also comes with a gift card from Mud Bay and a certificate for a health exam. Mm-hmm. So it's a really great deal, and it's a wonderful time to give a pet a home.
That sounds wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us on KBOO News in Depth today, Laura.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. Laura Klink is with the Oregon Humane Society, and you can check them out. The address is 1067 Northeast Columbia Boulevard in Portland, or you can go online and check them out too at www.oregonhumane.org/adopt. I'm Annette Newell.
And I'm Rachel Hartley. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO News.
KBOO Community Radio is requesting proposals for a grant writer to provide ongoing grant writing services and application support. This is a one-year contract position for 200 hours, compensated at $25 an hour. Proposals must be submitted electronically to Delphine Crescenzo, station manager at Dell, that's D-E-L, at KBOO.FM. Proposals are due Friday, January 4th at 5 p.m. Responsibilities, background information, the scope of work, and proposal requirements can be found at KBOO.FM/grantwriter2018.
Today is the last big give day with Willamette Week's Give Guide. Anyone who donates $10 or more to KBOO today will be entered to win the Exploregon Vacation Package. This includes a pair of premium level seats to Literary Arts Presentation of author Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie and a two-night stay at the Portland Marriott Waterfront. It also includes a trip to Astoria with tickets to Liberty Theater, an overnight adventure at Crater Lake with two passes to the Crater Lake Zipline, and more. Anyone who gives $10 today or more will be entered to win. Go to kboo.fm/give or call at 503-231-8032. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. Your dollars have the power to communicate your values. So again, give now at kboo.fm/give or call 503-231-8032.
The time is 5:59. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, Rose City Native Radio.
You are listening to a digital indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City Native Radio.
Can you tell us an Indian first then?
Good evening, everyone. How are you? You are listening to Rose City Native Radio. I am DJ Yellow Horse. It's just going to be me tonight. So it's the last casting of us for 2018. Are you excited? I'm excited. So today, yeah, we got music, poetry, more, and my little infamous rants that I enjoy to do because it's always a wonderful time to get something off of your chest, and what better day to do it than right before the New Year's, right? So let's get started. Let's listen to Tara Williams, and this is Islands of Decolonial Love here on Rose City Native Radio.